Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer, Arden Zwelling, and Ben Nicholson Smith. It is Tuesday, May 3rd, and our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. And Ben, the only thing the Blue Jays can do is play one-run games. They're addicted. They have a problem. It's the only way they know how to play. They either have to win by a run or lose by a run. And I believe they are contractually obligated to enter the sixth inning tied.
It's wild. I mean, and they're 8-3, right? In one-run games at last count.
Better than that. I believe 9-4 after Monday night, I think. I should know that better off the top of my head.
It's been a really strong run for the Jays in these one-run games. And, you know, some of this is not sustainable. Obviously, you look at Jordan Romano, and I think the last time I checked, he was on pace to pitch something like 91 games. Like, he had pitched in more than half of their games to open the season. So, obviously, I mean, it's not going to continue. It's not going to be sustainable. It doesn't have to be, but they're generally winning them is the point. Whether it's 9-3 or, you know, 8-4, they're doing really well in these situations. And I think to some extent, it's a fluke. To some extent, it's better defense. It's better pitching. I think there's been better managing by the Jays so far this year. So those things add up and they put themselves in a really good spot.
9-3 in one run games, just so that we get the actual correct information out there, which is going to be an interesting thing to track over the course of the season if the style of baseball continues. Why do you say the Blue Jays have been better managed this year as opposed to previous seasons?
It's hard to pinpoint. I'll be curious to hear your thoughts as well. But to me, there are just little moments where, you know, Ross Stripling comes out of the game. This is on Monday night. Comes out of the game after four innings against the Yankees, right? And the Yankees, of course, on a 10-game win streak of their own. So the Jays aren't even in first place as we record this. But the Yankees are playing great. It's early in the season. I mean, we're talking the beginning of May here. But I like the sense of urgency that Charlie Montoyo and bench coach John Schneider are bringing to these games. And I point to that fifth inning where you could have left Stripling in. You could have brought Trent Thornton in. And he could have been your middle reliever. But you had some good Yankees hitters coming up, and they went to David Phelps. And Phelps pitched really well in that situation, got out of there scoreless. And to me, that's managing with a sense of urgency in games that could matter, in a division that's probably going to be tight against the team that's probably your biggest rival. And they're managing to win that game in a way that I don't think we necessarily would have seen. Partly, again, it's the resources, it's who you have in the bullpen, but I liked that decision.
It does not seem like there's a lot of faith in Ross Stripling to face a lineup a third time through. And I say that because I'm pretty sure every single one of his starts has ended exactly at 18 batters faced. It doesn't matter what inning it is. Like, the Blue Jays are just not letting him face a lineup a third time through. And I think that's doable when you've got 28-man rosters. It might be a little bit tougher going forward with only 26. It's going to depend on just the state of your bullpen and like how many games you've played recently and where things are at. Do you think there's a world even where Ross Stripling and Hyunjin Ryu start piggybacking down the line, and maybe, you know, Hyunjin Ryu takes the first two trips and then Ross Stripling takes the third trip plus if he's rolling? Like, how do you think this sort of evolves over time?
I do think that's possible. Yeah, I think that, you know, when Ryu comes back and he's set to make a rehab start over the weekend, I'm not sure that you're expecting 6 or 7 innings from him. So I think you probably do want to have someone lined up and ready to go. You know, Stripling, I think you keep him stretched out as long as you can, because you never know when someone else is going to need a breather. So I think you want to make sure that he's ready to give you 60, 70 pitches. And, you know, I think there will be times, like, he'll stay in the rotation or go back into it later in the year. And I think there will be times if you're facing, I don't know, Oakland or the Tigers or the Orioles, I think there'll be times that you let him go through the order a third time. But against the Yankees, I like the urgency. I like saying, we're going to David Phelps. We're going to try to win right now.
I do feel kind of bad for him because he's been pitching pretty well.
Yeah.
And he's like such a good soldier for the Blue Jays. Just does like exactly whatever's asked. Like, just does his job. And like, obviously not an overpowering guy and not a guy who's going to outstuff anyone, but like a really crafty guy on the mound. You look at the outing that he threw Monday against the Yankees. All of a sudden became like a changeup off the fastball guy. Like, threw his changeup more in that outing than I've ever seen him throw it. And this is a guy who typically, like obviously, you know, he's got to establish his fastball and he's got to command that to both sides of the plate, but then like tries to work in his big curveball because curveball breaks a ton and is like a really good weapon, and he can land it for strikes in the zone. Like he can go strike to ball with it. He could throw it first pitch. Like he could do a lot of different things with it. I just never seen like the version of Ross Stripling that we saw on Monday. And I think it's a credit to him that he is kind of able to be that sort of chameleon on the mound each time he goes out and pitch differently, right? There's some days where it's like he favors his slider as well, right? Like he's kind of, he really does tailor his game plan to the opposition, to the opponent that he's facing, and I'm sure to whatever he feels best with that day and whatever he's been carrying through from his prior outings. But the last several times I've seen him, like stuff's been really good and it's been different each time out. So it's almost like, you know, if he was a young, just starting his MLB career guy with maybe a bit more velo, like I wonder if an organization would be like, yeah, let's see if we could push him, you know, three trips through. But like, because he's Ross Stripling and because of the track record, they don't. But I do wonder if, you know, what this guy has to do to just get a little bit more rope.
Yeah. And that time might come. And like you say, it could be bullpen dependent. The Jays do have a lot of off days coming up finally in May after basically playing every day to start the season. So, you know, that could allow the Blue Jays to continue using the bullpen heavily, but there's a limit there as well. I also think, you know, with Ryu, like, let's see him come back before we give his rotation spot to Ross Stripling. And he's not there yet. So let's see that happen. And to me right now, Ross Stripling's in that rotation and he's an important part of it. I think moving forward, whatever the role is, you know, he's probably going to pitch 100 plus innings for this team. And generally, they've been pretty good. Like you say, the adaptability, the creativity on the mound, he can get the fastball up there to 94, 95 if he has to. And the changeup legitimately is good. So I think that you've got a really useful pitcher on this team.
Yeah, no, he can reach back and get that 95 when he needs it. It's not going to be 95 all night. But, you know, big spot, like I remember it was like a couple of runners on and Devers and Martinez, and he was like reaching back for, yeah, you know, big time fastballs, like one to Devers, because like you look at the way Devers gets attacked, it's like clearly that fastball up and away, like that's kind of the hole that guys are looking to exploit, and Ross Stripling did.
A ball and a strike and a swing and a miss. 1-2. 2-2. Got him. Oh, a big second out here in the third inning.
And then with JD Martinez, who I think in that spot was probably sitting breaking ball, like probably thinking, let me try to get Ross Stripling's curveball, and Stripling outthought him and stayed ahead of him and came, you know, got 95 mile per hour heaters past like a really good hitter. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Ross Stripling is like sneaky impressive. Huge shout out to Dan Schulman, who says this all the time. Like, his gift is his curse, and yeah, it's that adaptability that you were saying, right? Like, it's that versatility, because you're not going to ask Hyunjin Ryu to take on a bullpen role. It's just not going to be a fit with him. But with Ross Stripling, like, he is so flexible and adaptable that the Blue Jays, when if they are faced with that decision, are obviously going to ask Ross Stripling to move to a bullpen role, just because like it'll be such a smoother transition. Even though on balance this year, if you want to just talk performance and results, Ross Stripling has been much better than Hyunjin Ryu
or Kikuchi. I mean, he's been good. You know, so it's also worth noting with all these guys, and I think probably especially for Kikuchi, maybe for Stripling as well, but you think about the opponents that they have faced, and they have just run the gauntlet of tough opponents. And some of these guys, like Kikuchi's one of them, they've basically missed the quote-unquote easy opponents when the Jays have had them. So it's just right. AL East, AL East, Astros, back to the AL East. I mean, really tough opponents. And it's a credit to this entire team that they are where they are record-wise to be, what is it now, 15-9 as we record this? You know,
something else I should know off the top of my head. I don't. 15-9.
Yeah, yeah. 15-9.
15-9. But like, okay, but who are you actually like looking at the standings right now? You know,
a little bit.
I don't start looking at the standings really until well into summer.
Yeah, I normally wouldn't either, but I actually do find myself checking them. If only just to remind myself, like, so this year, winning the division is actually a bigger deal than ever, right? Because two of the division winners are going to get buys. And I think if you're the Jays, you obviously want one of those buys. And I don't want to say it's a foregone conclusion they even make it in, but let's face it, they need to make it in. If they don't make it in, we're having a whole different type of discussion as the season unfolds, especially after this start. So, you know, we're kind of thinking that they're going to make it in. They certainly are thinking that they're going to make it in. So really the level the differentiator is, do you get the bye or not? And so if the Yankees are the winner in the East, you're not getting the bye. So I kind of just do have my eye on it a little bit, definitely more than I normally would. And so, you know, the Yankees going this 10-game heater, you kind of have an eye on it. It's like, when is this going to end? Now it's on the Jays to end it themselves because they need some of those games.
Yeah, and I guess you're going to have an eye on what's happening in the Central and the West as well, just, you know, based on the three division winners, and you want to be one of those top two, so you're not playing in a wild card series, which would be three games. Am I right on that, or is it five?
I think so.
You might know better than I. There's a lot of things I should know off the top of my head yeah. that just are not there today. Yeah. But yeah, if it's only three, like, I mean, it's better than one, but that's still three coin flips, man. Like, it's still not a big sample for the, you know, better team to for sure win, yeah. right? It doesn't matter. Like, who, you know, if you're playing, like, you know, I don't know, say Detroit sneaks in or something yeah. like that, right? And you're playing them, like, they might beat you, man. It's yeah. three games of baseball.
Yeah,
crazy things happen.
I will say, though, I mean, if you're the Jays, and again, not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but if you're the Jays and you're thinking about how would this team look in the playoffs, they've got some questions. Like, I think the bullpen is one of them, especially seeing Jimmy Garcia the last couple times out. It hasn't looked great. But man, the rotation, the 1-2-3 of Gausman, Manoah, and Berríos, I think in that order, wow, it is hard to find a rotation that looks better. I mean, the Dodgers, obviously, the Padres with Musgrove and company, like, there are teams out there.
Houston, the White Sox.
But the Jays are right up there. They are right up there when it comes to the best groups.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's been kind of what's been carrying them right now. That and the bullpen. You mentioned the bullpen, right? And like, honestly, Jimmy Garcia, like, yeah, he's given up some runs, but the process hasn't been terrible, man. Like, yeah. honestly, like, it hasn't been, you know, on the plate quite as much, but I mean, I think his stuff has been fine. Maybe he's a little bit off, but honestly, some of the pitches that are getting put in play against him, I think he's just getting a little bit unlucky. Like, we're not seeing a ton of lasers against him. I think just balls are just kind of finding holes against him. You look at the location of his pitches. Yes, he's missed his spot a couple of times, but he's mostly been to the edges and been down with stuff that's moving. Like, I think you feel okay if you're the Blue Jays. Like, the thing is, this bullpen has had to be perfect in so many of these outings and so many of these days. And you look at that game on Monday is like a perfect example. Strips out after what, four innings, and then David Phelps comes in and it's like five outs from five hitters. Mm-hmm. And behind him, Trevor Richards was four outs from four hitters. Adam Simber was three outs from three hitters. Like, the bullpen was perfect, and it needed to be because the Blue Jays weren't hitting at all with runners in scoring position, as they haven't been throughout this year. But your bullpen isn't always going to be perfect. Like, it's going to go through ebbs and flows. Like, there's going to be times where that volatility goes the wrong way against you. And it's going to be times when Adam Simber gives up runs. There's going to be times when Jordan Romano blows saves. There's going to be times when, you know, Tim Mesa, like, misses with one of those two seamers and it leaves the yard. Like, these things are going to happen. So the Blue Jays need to start giving their bullpen yeah. more margin for error. Like, they are forcing them to just walk. It's not even a tightrope, dude. It's a string of dental floss that yeah. they're having to walk right now. It's so thin. And like, look, the bullpen pitched really well on Monday and the Blue Jays lost a game. Like, the bullpen gave up one run over what? So strip one, four, like, over the final five innings. Like, are you yeah. kidding me? That's great out of your bullpen. You'll take that day. But the Blue Jays go 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position and aren't able to cash guys from second and third, or constantly hitting into double plays. Like, at some point, the Blue Jays are going to have to come up with that big hit when they really need it, so that the bullpen doesn't have to be as taxed and as stressed and as constantly over-leveraged as it has been to this point.
For sure, for sure. And I think even, you know, with Jimmy Garcia and the struggles, he was up to like 97 on Monday night. So you yeah. like seeing that. You like seeing the stuff. Baraki, before he hit the injured list, I forget if we talked about this on the episode last week, but man, did his fastball ever have some life on the arm side to left-handed hitters in Houston. That was pretty impressive. So, you know, they have a lot of stuff to work with. There's always room to add. There's always room for more. Even after compressing the roster to 26, you know, there's still room at the back of that bullpen to potentially find some upgrades. But big picture, they've been great. They've been all you could ask for. And I think same for the rotation. I mean, honestly, you look at this pitching staff as a whole, the Jays have to be thrilled. I mean, Gausman is pitching like an ace. He looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, that's no exaggeration. I think you'd put him as a top 10 or 15 starting pitcher right now in the game. That's an ace you have at the top of your rotation. And a lot of guys have really stepped in line behind him and delivered great results.
I mentioned the struggles with the runners in scoring position. Toronto, as things stand here on May the 3rd, are 30 of 30 MLB clubs with a 173 batting average with runners in scoring position. Ben, does that mean anything? Is that going to continue? Is the positive regression going to hit like a tidal wave? It's a 56 weighted runs created plus the runners in scoring position right now, dead last in baseball.
Wow. I mean, to me, whenever I see that, I just think that's not predictive at all. Obviously, it goes a long way toward explaining, you know, why we haven't seen more runs from this team, a group that certainly has underperformed offensively. So I think it helps explain that. But I think in no way is it predictive. I think this group is capable of being a top 10 team, a top 5 team with runners in scoring position, because I think they're a top 5 or 10 offense overall, if not better. So yeah, I think that for any, you know, slice it any way, are they going to be a top 5 offense in night games? Yep. Day games? Yep. Like Eastern time zone, Western time zone, runners on, runners not on, bases empty, like any
what's the
way you slice it. Yeah, they're going to be a good offense. So that's just kind of how I view things. Now, you can't undo what's already happened. That's in the books. But I think moving forward, you know, especially once Teoscar Hernandez comes back, and that could be within the next week or so, they're going to be in a good spot.
I'll tell you why these struggles with runners in scoring position are not going to continue. And I wrote a bit about it after Monday's game. The Blue Jays may be dead last in weighted runs created plus with runners in scoring position. They're also dead last in batting average on balls in play at 188. Not sustainable. That's going to come up. They just by pure luck, pure fortune, just the balls you're putting in play are going to start dropping in, going to start finding holes, flares, broken bat singles, bloops, like things like that are going to start going your way. Like things that haven't been going your way to this point, shift beaters, stuff like that. So that production will naturally come up because a 188 BABIP just is not going to continue. And further to that, the Blue Jays with runners in scoring position have the sixth highest hard hit rate in baseball. So they are barreling the ball with runners in scoring position. They're just hitting it right at guys. And by the way, it's a 43% ground ball rate with runners in scoring position, which is below major league average. So they're hitting the ball in the air too. So they're hitting the ball hard and in the air and are experiencing a low batting average on balls in play with runners in scoring position. It's not all like, that's not everything. Clearly this comes down to execution as well, but I think the Blue Jays are making good contact, like the kind of contact you want to in those spots. They aren't striking out a ton in those spots. I think it's going to come around. It's going to, like, the positive regression is going to be very real with runners in scoring position. It just needs to happen soon for the benefit of this bullpen, which is carrying just so much of the load to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely has to happen soon. I think it will. And I think, you know, to me, when I think about the offensive turnaround that needs to happen for this team, really no player is more emblematic of it than Bo Bichette. And I think what we've seen from Bo, especially over the weekend against the Astros, you just started seeing way better contact, way better swings, particularly on fastballs. I mean, he was getting overmatched for much of April with fastballs that, and this is so uncharacteristic, and it's just sometimes what happens when players slump, even really good players, but he was a little late on the fastball. He wasn't getting his hands through the zone on it. And so you end up with these struggles from a player who historically just crushes fastballs, crushes everything. And so over the weekend, you start seeing him make better contact. Of course, the big home run on Sunday, but you start seeing, even with some of these outs, and this reinforces your point about the batting average on balls in play, sometimes he's making really hard contact. We saw it again on Monday. He hit a line drive right to shortstop. And, you know, those are the types of plays where, yeah, it's an out. It hurts the batting average. It hurts the OPS. But ultimately, you want Bo Bichette taking swings like that, making contact like that. And I think, you know, from this point on, I think Bo Bichette's going to be Bo Bichette. And for the Blue Jays, that's going to be transformative for their offense.
Dude, Bo's making incredible contact
this
year when he is making contact.
Sends it in the air to right. Tucker's going back, jumps, and it's gone!
Kept this inning alive, and then Bo caps it with this ball. First hit, first home run, right over the wall in right field. That's a great feeling.
Rafael Devers has the most balls in play over 95 miles per hour this season with 45. Bo Bichette has the second most with 40. He's put 40 balls in play this year at 95 miles per hour or higher. It's not all bad luck with him. Like, his swing decisions have been pretty poor at times. Like, he has chased some pitches that he really ought not to. He's expanded his zone when he doesn't need to. He's been over aggressive, and aggressiveness is like part and parcel to his game and important and what makes him great. And I don't think the Blue Jays would ever want him to not be aggressive, but I think that even probably he would admit there have been times where he has just like gone after pitches that he shouldn't. But when he's making contact, the ball is just exploding off of his bat. So yeah, that tells me that like things are going to turn around for him in a big way. And it was interesting. I had a conversation with someone around the Blue Jays recently because, you know, I was starting to ask some of the questions of people that I'm sure everybody around the team was asking of like, hey, you know, are you going to get him a day just to kind of like, you just recalibrate, like just reset, you know, just like get away from the grind for a second. And it was, the answer was like, no. Like, he's fine mentally. Like, they, you know, the people who are working with him every day are like, but in between the years, like, everything's good. Like, he is in a better place mentally this season than he was actually last season when he led the American League in hits, is what I was told. So, like, he's, like, I don't think the Blue Jays are at all concerned about Bo Bichette. I don't think they're going to move him in the batting order. I don't think they're going to ask him to do anything differently. I think they're like, hey, like, just keep doing what you're doing because you're going to come out of this. I think around the team, there's a very, very real confidence that Bo Bichette's going to come out of this in a big way and look a lot more like the Bo Bichette that we saw last year before long.
Yeah. And, you know, pitchers to this point have been throwing him a lot of fastballs. They've noticed the struggles against fastballs. They've thrown a lot of them. I think if you're the Blue Jays, you really hope that they've been doing their analytics work and seeing those struggles against fastballs so far, because I think, you know, going forward, if he shows up in Cleveland this weekend, the Guardians throw fastballs at him, he's going to hit them. It was a slow start, but that doesn't mean it's predictive. And I think that this is one of those times where he is such a good hitter that, you know, it's a little bit different if you're talking about someone like, I don't know, like a Zach Collins, and, you know, you're wondering how that looks. With Bo Bichette, he has proven this for a full season at the major league level against the best pitchers in the world. And so I think as you move forward, you want pitchers to be trying to get him out with fastballs because he can hit them. And I think we're starting to see that.
Yeah, 2/3 of the pitches Bo's seeing this season are fastballs.
A career high by far.
Yeah. You know how many hitters would be like, I would love it.
Yeah.
If 2 out of every 3 pitches was a heater. Like, that'd be amazing, right? Especially in this era where it's so funny. Like, pitchers are throwing the hardest fastballs they ever have. I think the average fastball velo this year is up over 94, but pitchers are throwing fewer fastballs than they ever have, like, you know, on a percentage basis. So it's like fastballs are harder to hit now than ever, but also hitters are getting fewer of them than ever. It's kind of a funny dichotomy. Just before we take the break, you mentioned Kevin Gausman, you know, in the breath of like the top 10 starting pitchers in baseball. And I think rightly so. Like, the guy is just lights out right now. He hasn't walked anybody. He hasn't allowed a home run. The strikeout to walk, it's insane. The amount of 0-2 counts that this guy is in is elite. Like, is unbelievable. When it comes to George Springer, do you think we need to start mentioning him in the breath of top 10 all-around offensive players in baseball right now, considering what we're seeing from him?
It's hard to argue against him in that category. I think, you know, you look at what he's doing and the numbers are right there along with his best seasons. Then combine that with the fact that the offensive environment in baseball is depressed. And it's even more impressive. And he's done it in huge spots for this team. Yeah, Springer's been everything that the Jays could have hoped for. On defense, too, by the way. I know you're asking about his offense. But, you know, that catch in right field.
Throw that in there, too.
Yeah, just crashing into the wall, like, neck first to save, you know, the game, potentially, on Sunday against Houston.
To right field. Springer back. He's got it! What a catch by Springer!
Can start in right field. But he keeps his eye on it, and looks it into his glove. He told me the other day.
Massive play. Other plays in center. He's been really good just overall. I think, you know, sometimes you see a player sign a big contract like Marcus Semien right now in Texas, and it's not really delivering at all. And that's okay. He will. He'll bounce back. He'll be a very good player for them. But Springer, we're just seeing it. He's playing like a $150 million player. This is why you spend big in free agency sometimes. This is why, you know, you go after those big name proven players, and you don't always, you know, of course you look on the waiver wire too, and you hope that Bradley Zimmer turns into something, but sometimes you just sign George Springer and let him be George Springer, and the results have been phenomenal. I mean, he's definitely played, you know, not just at an all-star level, but he's playing like a guy who should end up high on some MVP ballots.
I think he is a top 10 offensive player in this game right now. Defense as well. Just call him an all-around position player, top 10, right? And I think he belongs, like, I'm not saying, you know, he's towards the top of that top 10, right? Like, you got some really good players in this game. Mike Trout, Juan Soto, you know, like Wander Franco, Xander Bogaerts, right? Like, there's some freaking phenomenal players in this game, but I think George Springer is within that top 10 towards the 6, 7, 8, 9 range, right? Because just for all the reasons you just cited, the guy right now has produced half the F war than he did in all of 2021. And when he was healthy in 2021, he was really, really good. It's not like he was bad when he was on the field last year. And he's already produced half the F war he did last year. Like, the guy is just playing at such a high level right now. A guy who didn't have a lot of game reps during spring training and kept saying, yeah, I don't need them. Like, I'm good. I'll just hit off these like minor leaguers and these live BPs and things, yeah, and these minor league games, right? Like,
same with Gausman.
Side note, some like poor Blue Jays minor leaguers who kept having their like games disrupted by having all these Jays big leaguers coming in and like, yeah, I'm going to lead off every inning for the first four. Sorry, buddy. You have to wait till later. But you mentioned the catch and right, obviously. And like, I know I talked about this last time as well. You know, every logical like fiber of my body wants to be like, yeah, clutch isn't real, like that's not actually a thing. George Springer just defies it. The level of performance in really big leverage important moments, the execution, the way that just consistently he comes up with, whether it's at the plate, whether it's in the field, 7th, 8th, 9th inning, tight margins when his team needs it most, the way he consistently performs in those situations is just undeniable at this point. The way he is playing right now is like just something to behold, I think. Yeah. And like you said, he's playing like more than a $150 million player. Like, if this is what the Blue Jays are getting from him over the lifetime of this contract, they have an absolute bargain. And like, yeah, of course, look, he's an outfielder in his 30s, getting to his mid 30s. Like, there's going to be, I'm so sorry to even say this, there's going to be some decline towards the end of this contract, yeah, but like what he's doing right now, he is outperforming and outproducing what the Blue Jays have paid for.
Yeah, this is a peak performance. And absolutely. I mean, if the Jays could snap their fingers and like get out of the George Springer contract, no way. Like, they are loving that contract. Same with Kevin Gausman. I mean, to get Gausman for 110 right now, wow, that's a deal you love. Now, in contrast to that, if you could snap your fingers and just opt out of the Hyunjin Ryu deal in the last, you know, year and two thirds of that, yeah, you do that in a heartbeat. So you're not going to bat 1,000 on free agent deals. Ryu was good at the start. Who knows what's ahead for all of these contracts, but certainly Springer living up to his.
No doubt. Let's step away, but when we come back, we got to talk a bit more pitching. We got to talk about a lot more when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. All that when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. And it is time now for Keeping It Light, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben, a month into the MLB season. I guess it's a little bit less because we started a little bit late, but it's May 3rd. We're going to call it a month into the MLB season. What's your favorite early season storyline from 2022 so far?
You know, I'm just going to go with the Los Angeles Angels actually being good. Feels like a long time. Feels like they're always a team with exciting players. Obviously, Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, Anthony Rendon, but they never seem to put it together. And you look back, they've only made the playoffs one time since 2009. That was in 2014. You know, you look back at that roster, they had Josh Hamilton on that team, CJ Wilson, Houston Street, just a totally different iteration of these Angels back then. Mike Trout barely got the chance to test himself in those playoffs. I think he was 1-for-12 with a homer. And, you know, since then, they've just faltered at every turn. And it feels like they're always a team that comes short of living up to their potential. Who knows where this one leads, right? But to me, I want to see the Angels do well. I want to see them in the playoffs because Trout and Ohtani are as good as it gets. And I think that the baseball playoffs would be way more fun with those guys in the playoffs.
Oh, those guys on that stage? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Who doesn't want to see that, right? Like, it's such a, that's, yeah, give me expanded playoffs just as far as you have to expand them to get the Angels in, because I want to see the best players in the game on its biggest stage. I'm going to stay in LA for mine, but I'm going to go to the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw, who is turning back the clock. If you are not watching every Clayton Kershaw start, you need to be, because this has to be the last hurrah for him in a first ballot Hall of Fame career. And he is pitching at just an elite, exceptional level, like as well as he has in any of his MLB seasons. And his best MLB seasons are really, really good. And like, yeah, he's got no velo, like he's old, like it's not overpowering anybody. He is like primarily breaking balls right now, but they're so fun to watch because they're so consistent. He commands them so well. He uses them and sequences them in such interesting ways. They break like crazy, and he is just toying with hitters right now. Like, he is not walking anybody. He is racking up massive strikeout totals, weak contact, funky like swings, uncomfortable plate appearances. It's just been really cool to watch him, especially because there's been like these moments over the last several seasons where he has looked somewhat cooked, to be completely frank with you, and then has also been injured obviously a lot of the time as well. So to see him just recapture it and rediscover like his peak level of performance has been so cool to watch. I'm loving like some of the old guys getting it done in the game right now, like Kershaw, Adam Wainwright, who is like legitimately a 41-year-old man, like Zach Greinke, you know, some of these guys who are still out there dealing late in what'll be Hall of Fame careers. It's really cool to see.
Well, I throw Verlander in there too, and you know, I'm sure the Jays were happy that they missed him over the weekend, but man, he's having an incredible season, and they're really not holding him back. They're letting him go 6-7 innings. This is a case where, you know, I think Dave Roberts is a good manager, but, you know, seeing him pull back the reins on Kershaw early in the season, I didn't like that very much. I love what Dusty Baker's doing with Verlander, letting him get out there, letting him get after it. And if the elbow pops and he has to go for another TJ, then so be it. But I like seeing this, and the results are incredible. He's vintage Verlander. I mean, he's as good as he's ever been right now. And, you know, again, you have the curveball, you have the slider, you have the fastball. He's got great command as well. He's just such a complete pitcher. And to see that still as he approaches 40, incredible.
Yeah, Zach Greinke is 38, and I am like rapidly looking up his fastball velo right now because it's got to be like one of the slowest fastballs in baseball right now. He's averaging 88 miles an hour on his fastball right now. Zach Greinke threw his first five starts, 2.57 ERA. He has gone at least at least five each time out. He's gone six in back-to-back outings against the White Sox and the Cards. He's not striking anybody out. All right, Zach Greinke, Ben, has thrown 28 innings this year. How many strikeouts do you think he has?
I want to say like eight.
Seven.
Yeah.
In 28 innings?
Yeah.
Oh, it's incredible. What a craftsman. Like, what a like pro. Are you kidding me? With no stuff, without missing any bats whatsoever, the guy's swinging strike totals 4-3-3-3. Like, it's crazy. He's not missing any bats. He's just generating weak contact and being a pitcher in the age of the thrower, where you're seeing like these college dudes at like 105 and stuff like that. So amazing. Like, sign me up for every Wainwright, Greinke, Verlander, Scherzer, Kershaw start that we still have, because it's so cool seeing these guys get it done.
Yeah, it really is. Especially as the game has trended younger a lot of the time. These guys up there, you know, 40 years old, you see the shots of Pujols, Molina, and Wainwright in the dugout. I mean, they look older than a lot of coaching staffs, you know, including the Toronto Blue Jays at times. And they are. I mean, they're 40 years old, basically. You see a lot of coaches in the major leagues in their 30s. So it's cool to see.
From that end of the age spectrum, like to pretty much as far to the other end of the age spectrum as we can go, I just wanted to give a shout out to Ricky Tiedemann on the podcast this week, who is putting up like some ridiculous numbers at high A. He's 19 years old and over four starts, 20 innings pitched. He's got a 0.9 ERA. He struck out 46% of the batters that he has faced. The other day, he was perfect through five and then bumped up against his pitch count, obviously, and came out of the game, but like had it all working, like 95 mile an hour fastball up to 98 with crazy movement on it. Like you can go look at the video of his fastball, which has like all kinds of late life. The circle change he throws, it's been compared to Sean Manaea's by some people that I've talked to. It's got a bunch of separation off of his heater. He's developing a slider. He's got a ton of spin on it, like an amount of spin that would actually be like pretty high among MLB pitchers right now. Like obviously doesn't quite have the command of it. It doesn't quite have the command of everything that he needs right now. Like you will still see some pretty elevated walk rates from him. But he's 19, he's a work in progress, right? When the Blue Jays drafted him, they said like, hey, here's a guy with a ton of untapped potential who just hasn't been exposed to like a professional environment yet and the kinds of resources that you have as a professional when it comes to pitch design, when it comes to strength and conditioning, when it comes to development and getting better. So the Blue Jays brought him in, and this is like the ultimate ideal of the new player development complex in Dunedin. They brought him into that environment and gave him all these resources and exposed him to all this stuff. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, I've added 5 miles an hour to my fastball. And like, hey, my breaking ball isn't like nothing anymore. Now it's a developing pitch. And now, hey, my changeup is getting better and I have better feel for it. So like, obviously that work is not done and Ricky Tiedemann's not going to be in the big leagues anytime soon. But you look at these like massive strides that he's made, like a lot of people this spring were pointing to him as like a potential breakout in this system. And he absolutely has been that. And I think he's somebody that we're going to be talking about a lot in the years to come.
Yeah, definitely heard his name in the spring. And since then, he's clearly delivering on that promise. So what round was he drafted?
I want to say second.
Okay.
I don't know off the top of my head.
So relatively high pick then. And so if he's 19...
Third round, 2021.
Okay. So then timeline-wise, I mean, you know, this year's probably too soon, but are we thinking next year's, you know, in play?
I doubt it. We'll see. It'll depend on his development, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll depend on need, obviously, at the big league level and just how things continue and health and all that. But I mean, big bodied lefty, ton of velo. It's interesting. Do you think somebody, so I mentioned earlier, like Ben Joyce is the guy in college who's throwing 105. Like you probably saw it, right?
Yeah.
If you're the Toronto Blue Jays, like you've got to, I need to ask somebody about this, but like you've got to be tempted if Ben Joyce is on the board third round where Ricky Tiedemann was to like say, hey, let's not only draft him,
yeah,
let's put him in our big league bullpen today.
Yeah.
Let's draft him and send him straight to the big league bullpen. And like, yeah, we're not like drafting like a long-term developmental thing. We'll see what he becomes. But are you going to tell me 105 with a wipeout breaking pitch isn't going to play in the big leagues right now?
Oh, yeah.
Like, would you not, as a win now team that's trying to win a championship, and as we mentioned, could use more swing and miss in its bullpen, are you not tempted to do that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I guess to me, I'm like that. I don't think 105's there in the third round. Like, I think he goes.
All right, fair enough.
I would guess he goes in the first round. And then the question becomes, you know, are you willing to use your first round pick on a pitcher who, you know, who you view as a short-term play? Like, that's where it gets tough. I don't think this Toronto Blue Jays organization would do that. I think there's a case to be made for doing that. Certainly, if there was a team like, you know, positioned in the way that the Jays were in 2015 and 16, where you've kind of got the end of the road approaching, maybe that's a good time to do that. For the way this team is built, I think you only draft him if you believe that he can become something longer term. But hey, if he's throwing 105, there's no reason he can't help you long term as well.
It gets tough when it comes to bonuses and things. And like, how would he value a bigger bonus versus not getting a big league opportunity right away? Would he accept a lower bonus from the Jays if they were like, hey, your service clock's going to start right away. Yep. You're going to be in the big leagues right away. Like, what was Garrett Crochet's bonus?
Right.
I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't know.
But like, that's another guy who went first round and like straight to the show.
Put it this way. If you are throwing 105, you've got the leverage to make some good choices for yourself. And, you know, whatever it is that he wants and values, I think he'll be able to make that choice come this summer.
Garrett Crochet, $4.5 million bonus at the 11 pick. So that would have been right around slot or something, maybe a little bit below, but like right around slot there, I think. So that's what you're doing as like, as an organization, you're kind of saying, well, we're going to like, look, here's a ton of our bonus pool and here's a first round pick, which we could, you know, invest in a guy we're going to slowly develop and bring along and build up and be a part of our future. So there's an opportunity cost there as well. This is what we're paying in order to make an impact addition to our bullpen today and possibly help us win a championship.
I mean, if he's already throwing 105 and then you put him in the Jays development facility, who knows where the velo goes? I mean,
but no, he's skipping the development facility, man. He's skipping it. He's going straight to Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, draft him and 3 days later, he's in the bullpen I'm talking about. He's going straight to Rogers.
Selfishly, it sounds great. I love watching velo. This sounds awesome. You know, have him, you know, open for Stripling, have him come in and pitch the fifth inning for you in that David Phelps role we were talking about earlier. I think that'd be phenomenal. Let's see it happen.
It's so risky because it could be a disaster too, right? Because like, look, it's one thing to do it in college. It's another to do it in front of, you know, 48,000 people under the lights, right?
Absolutely.
On national TV at the highest level. Like, obviously 105 is like overpowering, but until a guy's in that environment, you don't know how he's going to respond, right? Maybe he loses the zone. Maybe he can't locate. 105 is great, but it's got to be on the plate.
If he's there, Jays are probably picking 20th, something like that this year. If he's there when they pick, get him, take him. 105, 20th overall, you do that every time.
This is kind of an odds and ends side of the podcast right now, but it's just a bunch of like kind of interesting stuff I want to touch on. So we're going to jump around a little bit. What do you make of the strike zone for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that he's seeing this year? Because like, you and I actually talked to him after the game on Saturday, I think it was, whatever day it was this weekend, where he threw his bat and Charlie got run. And you don't usually see those kind of reactions from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, he's usually a walk kind of quietly back to the dugout, but walk slowly. So that, you know, the ump knows, right? And everybody knows he's upset about it, but he doesn't like yell or throw a fit or whatever, or show anybody up or throw stuff. So it is actually kind of rare to see him throwing things and that upset. And I think that he has a right to be, because it wasn't just that day. Like, it's all season. At one point this weekend, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was top five across MLB in terms of called strikes outside the zone, which, when you were talking about not only one of the best hitters on the planet, but also somebody with a demonstrated understanding of the strike zone, not a free swinger, not a guy who chases and expands, a guy who last season had like a 25% chase rate, like somebody who knows what a ball and a strike is, for him to be getting the strike zone that he has to this point this year, I can understand why he would feel like almost disrespected by it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I thought our conversation with Vlad and a couple other writers was really interesting after the game on Saturday. He seemed, to me, pretty calm in that moment. Like, he didn't seem like someone who was, you know, really carrying the frustration of that moment forward. I think he, you know, from what he was telling us, he really wanted to let it go. The moment he gets back into the dugout, he said he wants to move on and he wants to just, at that point, focus on what's next. So, you know, that's a good intention to have. I'm sure it's not quite as easy to do that in the heat of a competitive game. But there's a lot going on here, because I do think objectively in that game and in other games, there have been times that he is getting hurt by these calls. The umpires are missing the calls, and then that is putting him at a disadvantage. At the same time, you know, in the course of a year, that's going to happen. There are also going to be times that umpires miss calls and it goes in his favor, and we're not going to be talking about that. And he is not going to be sitting there giving the umpa, you know, fist bump or a thumbs up afterwards. So to some extent, part of being a major league hitter, a mature major league hitter, is taking those in stride and not letting it get to you. If the 0-0 pitch, which happened both of his called strikeouts on Saturday, the 0-0 pitch was a ball that was called a strike. That sucks. also, you have to be able to move through that and focus on the rest of the at-bat, because you might have three or four more pitches on which you can do some damage. So that's something that Vladdy knows. This is not new information for him. He's someone who has thought a lot about hitting, who's very thoughtful when it comes to his approach at the plate. So it's not lost on him that he needs to move on when that happens. And he's extremely competitive in those at-bats. And I've seen it a few times this year where he'll get called out, and the moment afterwards, he is so pissed. And I do think he moves on from it, but he is so focused in those at-bats, and they mean so much to him that he does not want any call to go against him, of course. But it's going to happen. George Springer and others telling him, like, look, man, we need you in this game. We can't have Charlie come out and run and get tossed and distract every single time this happens. So there's a lot going on there. I don't know where you land on it, Arden, but it's a lot to kind of consider.
I think he's so frustrated because of what we talked about last time out, was that day in mid-April where he just decided to stop expanding and he decided to really lock in on his swing decisions and like made such discernible improvements in that area and was expanding earlier in the year for one reason or another. And it's my understanding that there was just like a very brief conversation that happened between Vlad and like some of the Blue Jays hitting folks, and they're just like, why are you doing this? And he's like, I don't know, and he just stopped. Which is like pretty next level ability on his end to be able to do that. But the fact that like he can go back to the dugout and pull up the iPad and confirm what he felt at the plate and know, like, yeah, no, I did my job. I didn't swing at the pitch that isn't a strike. I'm trying to just swing at strikes. And he has that ability. So I think that's part of why he's so frustrated, is because he made that adjustment. So like, yeah, he should feel wronged by what's been happening to him. And it's been happening to him more often than it has to the vast majority of major leaguers. I think that's just coincidence. I don't know that there's anything there. If I'm an umpire, I'm certainly giving Vlad the benefit of the doubt on a borderline call. But I mean, a lot of the calls that got against him haven't even been borderline, Ben. Like a lot of them have been like legitimately just balls that are off the plate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's, you know, as a hitter, you know, those decisions, the borderline decisions, are where you make your money. That's where you make your impact, right? Joey Votto isn't Joey Votto because he knows the pitch a foot off the plate outside is a ball. Everyone knows that. I mean, it's really on the margins that you can really make that difference up. And so you got to think, in the course of a season where you have, you know, 650 at-bats, and in Vladdy's case, plate appearances, you know, that's going to even out to some extent, even if it hasn't thus far. But it's navigating that, the emotions within an at-bat. That's part of his development as a hitter. That can't be an easy thing to do. I just can't be. And I think interesting too is, this is circling back a little bit to what we talked about with managing, but one of the reasons I actually say that the Jays have been managed better, that Charlie Montoyo is doing a better job managing, is you look at that moment, you want the manager coming out in that situation. You want him distracting attention from Vladdy, who had already been fined in that moment. You want the attention on someone else. Can be anyone. Could be John Schneider, could be Pete Walker, doesn't matter. But you don't want it on Vlad because you don't want Vlad getting tossed. And I think for Charlie to do that in that situation, that's when you're supposed to get tossed as a manager, is if your star player is in danger of facing some heat, potentially getting a suspension, potentially getting into a conflict, take the attention away and you take that on.
Yeah, no, you don't want Vlad getting tossed and Charlie staying in the game.
No.
John Schneider's very capable, you know, like he can do the job, right? But there's nobody who can replace Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at the plate.
The difference between, Charlie to John Schneider, fine. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to Ghost K. Kato, not fine.
Exactly. And one other like small little bit of Vlad minutia, I think it was on Friday. Remember that play to first where there's a runner on second? I think it was Siri on second and someone hit a grounder to Vlad at first and he gunned him out at third base. Remember that play? Fans will remember that play. It was cool because Vlad was like playing in basically towards the infield grass almost in a very interesting like alignment. But I'm not questioning the Blue Jays positioning at all this year, because it actually has turned. Not only has it like turned, and this is an aside on top of an aside, not only has the Blue Jays like positioning turned potential hits into outs, it's actually turned like doubles into singles.
Yes.
With the four man outfield, yeah. Which is so huge. You think about the ninth inning. If you got like a Joey Gallo up in the ninth, like, and he, you know, rips one up the line, and you've got the four man outfield, so you're able to get to that ball quick and hold him to a single as opposed to a double. Now you still got the double play set up for Jordan Romano. You don't have Gallo on second. Now if Jordan Romano gets his ground ball, he might get two outs rather than one out with Joey Gallo now on third. And when you're playing with these tight margins, that four-man outfield keeping doubles to singles is kind of like a sneaky thing that is huge with the Agreed. Positioning that maybe we don't talk about enough. Back to my original side. So Vlad comes up with that ground ball at first and guns out, I'm pretty sure it was Siri, at third base. He threw that ball to Matt Chapman at third at 88 miles an hour.
Wow.
Which is, I love StatCast because we know this stuff now. He threw that ball at 88 miles an hour. That's Zach Greinke's fastball, right? Like, he gunned the guy out at third with Vlad still has a cannon. He doesn't get to use it that often. We watch Matt Chapman at third put on clinics every night, and like every one of his throws is like perfect, like accuracy, velocity, everything is just like one of the best third basemen in the game, unquestionably. Vlad threw that ball from first to third harder than Matt Chapman has thrown a ball from third to first this season.
Wow.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
Vlad is like so uncommonly talented at so many things in this game that he's still finding new ways to kind of blow my mind, that he just busts out this like 88 mile per hour throw across the diamond out of nowhere after not doing it for 2-3 years. It's incredible.
Yeah. And the sprint speed too. I mean, he moves really well. And, you know, this is on Monday. As Dan and Joe were calling the game, they're making the point, like, if there's a hit with Vlad on second, like, he's coming around third, and he is a very aggressive base runner. There will be times that, you know, that will backfire in the course of a season, but there will be times that pays off, and he is a confident and aggressive base runner. You know, you can see why he was a top prospect, because bat to ball, power, you know, the speed is actually better than you'd think. The arm is there. He's become a better defensive first baseman when it comes to fielding, making picks, hasn't made an error yet this year. So you're looking at a complete player. You're looking at a superstar player. And of course, there are adjustments, but he's showing us a lot.
He's just uncommonly and innately talented. It's incredible. Was there anything else that you wanted to get to before we bid everybody adieu here, Ben?
Just one little thing. And it's just, you know, we've talked about Zach Collins in the course of this podcast. Of course, he's kind of emerged. He has shown some big power at times, but it's interesting. You know, he's striking out 41-42% of the time last time I checked. That's like Joey Gallo level. And so we have seen the Jays really pull back his playing time. There was a time that he was in there every day as a DH or catcher, and we've seen them pull back a little bit. And I'm going to dig around on this a little bit more, but, you know, as we record this right now, I just wonder if the strikeout rate in certain matchups isn't that appealing to the Blue Jays. And clearly he's due for some regression. If you're striking out 40% of the time, you're not going to be a 250 hitter. You're not going to be a 270 hitter. So he still has the power. He's still a useful bench player, and the Jays have a few of those, but it's just been kind of interesting to monitor that. And looking at that strikeout rate was a little bit of a, you know, an orange flag or a red flag.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are certain matchups that the Blue Jays really like for Zach Collins, and then I think there are other matchups. And it's not just like righty-lefty, right? Like, it's swing plane, it's attack zones, it's velocity, it's where pitchers like to use their stuff in the zone. Like, it's that kind of level of matchup. Like, there's certain matchups the Blue Jays really like for Collins, and there's certain ones that, yeah, they are going to keep him out of. And I think that's probably why. And I don't know the specifics of it, right? But, like, I wonder if it has something to do with velocity. You look into it, the Blue Jays have seen an absurd amount of velocity this year. Like, and just as a team, like the pitchers that they are facing, like every night they're facing somebody who's like 95, 96, 97, 98. Like, it's pretty crazy. They face more velocity than other team in baseball. So I'm sure that is a factor. And like, it's well documented that Collins has an inefficient swing, and there are pitches he can get beat by, right? Just because of the hitch in there. Credit to him for still barreling balls with that. But I think that you've seen him barrel some balls because he's been put in some good matchups to succeed, right? Like, that's so I would expect the playing time to be somewhat intermittent going forward. Like, he's not the type of guy that you just pencil in day after day after day, right? And that's not what he was brought here to do. But I think that even like when Danny Jansen's healthy, I think Zach Collins is still on this roster. obviously he's getting his DH at bats now, but I think you probably see him at first base a little bit more. I don't know that we've seen him there yet, but I think you are going to see him there at some point. And you know, the occasional outing behind the plate with the right pitcher to match him up with, right? Like, but like, I don't know that you want him back there for Hyunjin Ryu, for a guy who like needs a good framer, or for a guy who's going to be, you know, throwing five pitches on the night. Like, you want him there for someone with a pretty pared down repertoire who's just trying to like pump hard fastballs and sliders. You know, Collins had a lot of success with Carlos Rodon last year, right? Like, that was a really good, you know, guy to match him up with. So I think the Blue Jays will also look for matchups defensively with Zach Collins. But yeah, I think that if, you know, Danny Jansen gets healthy and Alejandro Kirk's still on the roster, Tyler Heineman goes to AAA, and I think Zach Collins is here in a sort of, you know, bench part-time role where he is like Greg Bird and Reese McGuire in one.
Yes.
Where it's like you can occasional catching spots, occasional first base spots, left-handed thump off the bench, matchups that we like, some DH days. And, you know, it's sparse playing time, but certainly playing time going forward.
Yeah. And we should note, too, he does have an option. And, you know, for anyone wondering as they're listening to this, Gabriel Moreno, not off to a great start in AAA. He's been okay, but not a great start. Same with Relvis Martinez at AA, not off to a great start, striking out a lot. So for anyone wondering about those two prospects, they're kind of in the background working some things through. But Danny Jansen hopefully at some point comes back. And in the meantime, you know, if your third catcher or second catcher is striking out a bit too much, that's a fine problem to have.
Yeah, I think Moreno's day is coming this year still. I just, I think it's going to be what I said coming into the season, like the June, July situation, right? The Blue Jays are going to want him to be hot when he comes up. They're going to want him feeling good. You know, they're not going to want him in the rhythm of the plate that he is right now to bring him up. So yeah, I think that he's in a good spot. Look, Danny Jansen's not that far off. Teoscar Hernandez should be back for the Cleveland series on which starts on Thursday. I think, you know, Danny Jansen might be like a week behind him, but yeah, not that far off. You see him out here catching live BPs. Yep. And he's starting to get into batting practice. It's an obliques, so you never know, setbacks happen, but yeah, I don't think Danny Jansen's that far off. And it had really looked like he had unlocked something at the plate when he, you know, right before he went down, like end of 2021 and beginning of 2022, like he was just kind of embracing the pull in his game and just yanking balls into left field and letting, you know, hits the other way kind of come naturally instead of trying to make them happen. And just you know, chatting with him, he feels like he's mentally kind of freed himself up from, you know, a lot of the things that were clouding his thoughts at the plate beforehand. So it's going to be interesting to see him try to carry that over and continue to have some of the, you know, improved offensive performance that we've seen lately. And then obviously, like, such a steady hand. Yes. Behind the plate, and somebody that really has the trust of the pitching staff. Big credit to Alejandro Kirk for the way that he's improved defensively, particularly with pitch framing. But, you know, having Danny Jansen back behind the plate for these pitchers is going to be a big deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. You get, you know, potentially with Kirk and Jansen, a nice defensive tandem and maybe even a nice offensive tandem for a team that could definitely use runs wherever they can get them.
That's right. We are going to step away, but I want to remind everybody that you can email us at the letters@sportsnet.ca. Obviously, you know, Ben's on Twitter @BNicholsonSmith. He's going to be down at the ballpark here on Tuesday and Wednesday, finishing up the Yankees series. I'll be in Cleveland Thursday through Sunday for the 4-game series there. So you can read our work at sportsnet.ca, see us on TV, all that stuff. And then, oh my goodness, it's an off day after that. What's that like? I haven't experienced one of those very much.
It's been a while.
This
season.
It's
been a while.
What are we going to do with ourselves, yeah, Ben? Well, I'm going to travel to Toronto, but maybe you'll, I don't know, get outdoors.
That's
That'd
the
be
hope.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's the See hope. A patio. That'd yeah. be pretty sweet. And then we'll just carry on every week with the letters. But want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade and Amal Delich. As always, want to thank all of you for listening. For Ben, I'm Arden. This has been at the letters.